Chapter 9. He's on the deck of the burning barge. Men in the dark blue uniforms of Malfoy Enterprises are running about, dousing the flames with water, trying to save the cargo. "Leave the cargo," Draco shouts. "Get on the lifeboats." But none of them listen. So Draco amplifies his voice, shouts it again, just as something creaks overhead, and an enormous pile of crates tips right onto a group of men. Draco's wand flashes in their direction. "Arresto momentum!" he shouts, and the crates slow, turning in the air. His stomach somersaults, but he ignores it. "Onto the lifeboats! Now! That's an order!" The men run. Draco releases the cargo containers. They crash onto the deck with a shower of debris and sparks, splinters of wood coming through white clouds made by bursting sacks of flour. Draco stares at the mess for a beat, mesmerized by the vivid whiteness of it all. This is it, his life, bursting at the seams, burning at the edges. This here is years of work, of built-up trust. What will he do now? Whatever shall he do? Then he shakes himself out of his stupor to follow his men to the lifeboats. Draco lowers the boats with magic, one by one, unwilling to trust the cables, what with the flames rising ever higher around them. He coughs, hacking and spitting to the side. His phlegm is black with soot. "Is everyone out of the hull?" he shouts to a man sprinting out of an open door. He must be the captain, Draco realizes, if the uniform and hat are anything to go by. "They are," the captain says, eyes widening as he recognizes Draco. "Mr. Malfoy." "No time! Get in a lifeboat!" An ear-splitting crack rips through the hissing fire, followed by a groan, and the ground shifts beneath Draco's feet, sending him sliding down the deck as the front of the ship begins to rise from the back, taking on water. "Malfoy!" shouts the captain, falling on his stomach and grabbing Draco by the arm just in time to keep Draco from sliding into a burning pile of crates. He cries out, and Draco can see that he's holding a railing with his bare hand. Draco doesn't want to imagine how hot the metal must be against the man's skin. Draco casts a stabilicorpus, orders, "Let go, I've got us," as his magic secures the two of them in place. The captain releases the railing. His palm is burnt an angry red. "Last man off board," someone shouts, and Draco scrambles up the tipping deck to the edge of the barge, pulling the captain up behind him. "Fuck!" snarls the captain, pointing. "That was the last lifeboat!" The thing is aflame, burning violently against the side of the barge. "I'll apparatus," says Draco, concentrating. He takes a deep breath, and the smell of the captain's singed flesh fills his nostrils. His stomach roils. He bends in half, vomits. "I can't do it," he croaks, horrified with the realization. All that magic, all that knowledge, useless in the face of fire. "We need to jump. The water's freezing." "There's no choice," Draco says. "We'll die. Better the water than the flames." The captain nods, and together they climb over the railing and dive. The water is cold, stinging, unforgiving. An ache starts in his ankles and spreads through the rest of his body. Then what feels like thousands of red-hot needles seem to pierce his flesh. Draco inhales, and his lungs fill with water. He's drowning, he realizes remotely. He's drowning, and soon he will be dead. Who will tell his mother? In his mind's eye, he sees her face pale, her knees buckle. Children should not witness their parents learning of their deaths. He tries to fight then, because Draco always fights death, can't help himself. It's an instinctive gut reaction, not so much about living for something, as it is about dying for nothing. A refusal to go in any way but his own. He tries to move his limbs, but it feels like moving through jello. He kicks, claws, tries to find the light. The surface of the water is always in the direction of the light, but however much he struggles, kicks, and turns underwater, the light remains elusive, always at the edge of his vision, but never straight ahead. As the last of his strength leaves him, Draco can feel himself begin to sink. It's rather sickening death. Not at all like he'd imagined, just thick, watery darkness closing in, filling him, filling even the brightest places inside of Draco. With a final burst of consciousness, Draco realizes that there is some good in him, in all that darkness. That if he'd been, as he always privately believed, made entirely of sin, there'd be nothing in him to dim. And yet he can feel it, the water extinguishing his light. There's a hiss, a crackle, a clang, followed by a clamor. Lights, vivid blue and red, spark and dim, then shift, oil on water-like, before sliding out of focus. There's a voice, voices, screaming. Up! Someone shouts. Malfoy, wake up! Draco tries to breathe, but it feels like someone's sitting on his chest. Wake up! Pressing, pushing. Draco? It's a whisper this time. Draco tries again, splutters, then turns on his side, coughing up lungfuls of salty water. Malfoy, thank God, breathes Potter. You're alive. Barely, croaks Draco, looking around. He's forgetting something. What could it? Realization slams into him. The captain had jumped into the water too. Then he's on his feet, scrambling towards the water, shouting, Captain! He's here, says Harry, grabbing him, forcing him to the ground. Your crew got the both of you out. Everyone survived. Draco looks around wide-eyed, disbelieving. Everyone, I promise. You promise, I promise. Abruptly, Draco realizes that he's shivering, practically quaking with cold. We need to get you somewhere warm, says Harry, but Draco shakes his head. Off in the distance, right by the water, Draco can see men laid out in a row, the injured. I need to check on my men. Harry touches Draco's cheek, peers into his eyes, whispers, Please. I was so scared. I thought you weren't coming back. But Draco pulls away. I am responsible for them. I cannot leave until I know they're taken care of. Fine, snaps Potter, and apparates out of existence. Draco stares blankly at the spot Potter had just occupied. Then he gets up on shaky feet and stumbles over to the row of injured port workers. As he gets closer, the smell of charred flesh gets stronger, and Draco sways, dizzy with it. He licks his lips, they're salty from the sea, and forces himself to get closer. He's glad now, he realizes, that he insisted his crews wear Malfoy Enterprises uniforms, otherwise he doesn't know how he'd be able to tell his men, apart from the regular port workers. Most of Draco's men are fine, they're sitting up, tended to by their shipmates. The port workers are not so lucky. He sees a dozen broken bones, cuts, and scrapes, but worst of all he sees burns, some so extensive they cover a few of the men almost entirely. Drawing his wand, Draco moves to the most injured of them. He had been planning on using what magic he could on his own crew, but it's clear now that there are people that need it significantly more. So he crouches down, still shaking, and begins to cast. He's about to lose consciousness when a series of pops burst around him. Draco doesn't look up, too scared that if he stops casting the young man that he's working on, will die. A mediwizard in St. Mungo's white takes him gently by the hand and moves him aside. Let me take care of him, Mr. Malfoy. Draco blinks and looks at the mediwizard. He recognizes him faintly. He'd been a Slytherin a few years below him. What was his name? Thank you, Stuart, says Draco. Stuart nods, giving him a small smile before getting to work on the injured man. Draco looks around himself. The port is full of mediwizards moving through the injured men. Auras are extinguishing the last of the flames. The situation is under control, Draco realizes, and promptly passes out. In Draco's dreams, Potter is lying beside him, facing him. He runs his hand through Draco's hair, down his cheek, his neck. Draco opens his eyes and watches Potter watch him. He wonders briefly if he can put this dream into a jar. Stopper it up, keep it for cold nights, for rainy days. It takes a long while for Draco to realize that he isn't dreaming, that he is indeed in his bed, with Potter lying in it beside him, watching him silently as he runs his hand through Draco's hair over and over again. Hypnotizing. After a while, Potter's hand strays, brushes over his cheek, brow, the bridge of his nose. He runs his fingers over Draco's lips, and as Draco lets his lips part, breathing warm air on Harry's fingertips, Harry's eyes flash with desire. It's so naked and obvious that Draco shivers with an answering wave of lust. He has to close his eyes against it to resist climbing onto Harry, pressing him into the bed. His self-control is wasted because a moment later the sheets shift and suddenly Potter is on top of him. Draco only has a moment to meet his eyes and they are kissing. It's dizzying, heady. Draco finds himself breathless and panting, and they've barely even touched. Harry's lips are as warm and soft as he thought they'd be. But they're also hungry, demanding in a way that sends a fresh surge of want through him. Draco aches to touch Harry, is burning with it, can barely hold himself back. Then Harry whimpers, and Draco gives in. Surging up, Draco flips them, laying Harry gently onto the bed, before covering the smaller man with his body. "Merlin," murmurs Draco, kissing him over and over, running his hands forcefully down the man's side. "Merlin." And what can he say? How can he translate this? This mad, overwhelming desire? "Stop me," he whispers into the delicate flesh of Harry's neck. The man arches up beneath him, mouth open and gasping. "Stop me. Or Merlin, help me. I will have you right here." "Malfoy," groans Potter, and Draco is off of him in a flash, crawling backward and off the bed, fleeing from the room before he can reconsider. He's shaking and much weaker than he'd thought a moment ago. Draco goes into the next room, warding the door from intrusion, for once welcoming the nauseating feeling of magic. It helps get the lust under control. He climbs into the bed, ignoring how it smells like Harry. No, not like Harry, like Potter. The bed smells like Potter, and he's Malfoy. And that's all they are to each other, and he'd best remember that. And whatever that was just now, whatever had happened in the other room, was clearly the result of surviving. Life-affirming sex never goes out of style, Draco thinks with a self-deprecating laugh. But Draco doesn't want it. Draco wants real, or he'll have none of it. So he'll have none of it, he realizes, turning on his side and closing his eyes tight against the longing, twisting through him. It's just fine. This feeling is fine. He can deal with this. What he won't be able to deal with is having Potter and then letting him go, because he's aware enough to know that Potter will leave him eventually, as he should. And Draco's never been good at letting go of anything. And letting go of Potter? That will be unbearable. This is just fine. Draco starts shaking, still cold with residual hypothermia. He casts a final heating charm. This is just fine, he tells himself, as he drifts down into a dark and restless sleep.